Welcome to Inside Ag. I'm your host, Savannah Peterson. I have a fun mini-series coming up over the next few weeks to really dive into more programs offered through the Farm Service Agency, or FSA, because the ag industry loves to have acronyms. First, I'll be sitting down with Dennis McKinney, who is the State Executive Director of the FSA programs in the state of Kansas, to talk about different FSA programs available for Kansas farmers and ranchers. Next week, I'll be sitting down with Zach Duchenneau, who is the USDA FSA Administrator, to talk about farm loans. In this week's episode, Dennis and I talk about different FSA programs available for Kansas farmers and ranchers and the different financial and environmental impact that these loans can have on the state of Kansas. Dennis, welcome to Inside Ag.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Can we just start off? Give me a little bit of background about the FSA and how it helps Kansas producers.
The Farm Service Agency, of course, we're under United States Department of Agriculture. We run the farm programs. We administer the farm programs and the farm loan program for across the country. Your listeners will remember the old Farmers Home Administration. And in 1994, that got put into the Farm Service Agency. So we run farm programs, including the traditional programs, the disaster programs, and also the farm loan programs of various types.
Awesome. Dennis, today with you, I want to discuss three different programs that are really important to our members and have been brought up a lot recently in the different discussion meetings. The first being the CRP program, or the Conservation Reserve Program. Can you just give us a little overview of what the CRP is and what are some of the goals of it?
Yeah, the Conservation Reserve Program has been around since 1986. I farm in south central southwestern Kansas, down between Coldwater and Greensburg, that area. I think we put our first land into CRP in 1986. It was land probably never should have been broken out to begin with. The CRP program has nearly 2 million acres of Kansas, peaked out around 3.5 million acres a few years ago. But it's probably the biggest impact conservation program in the history of the United States to reduce erosion, improve wildlife habitat, make a number of changes to improve our land and return more of the land that never should have been broken out back to grass. Right now, across Kansas, we still have a continuous CRP sign-up going on for our programs. In western Kansas, that would be the Lesser Prairie Chicken CRP, and statewide we have an upland game CRP that we administer. We do expect to have a grassland CRP sign up coming probably in May. That's been very popular. That's been the one program that's boosted our CRP acres both within the state and nationally. It's a program aimed to help the ground that's already in grass to stay in grass and improve those practices. It's become more popular among producers who want to improve the grass cover, improve habitat, for example, for like Lesser Prairie Chicken, which has been listed as a threatened species. So it's a very popular program. I hope that will be coming in May. That's what the indication I have. Also, for western Kansas, most of western Kansas, there will be a migratory waterfowl safe CRP coming up. I prefer to call it Playa CRP because it focuses on playa restoration. Probably one of our biggest bang for the buck CRP programs I've ever seen. And it focuses on restoring playas. The tracts may be as small as 10 or 12 acres. It may be as small as maybe as big as 200 acres. You know, there are all kinds of sizes in there. But what we see in this program is it's a very user-friendly program. If you have a 12-acre playa you've restored in the middle of a quarter section, you want to graze the milo stocks in the winter, that's okay. Intermittent grazing is allowed. It's got a good payment rate. Some of the preparation costs of those playas is expensive, but we have conservation partners like the Playa Lakes Joint Venture that will help farmers cover the cost of that restoration. And so it's been very valuable to us. I can tell you the producers out there in Finney and Lane counties have signed up heavily because in the last sign up over four states, over a third of the offers were just in those two counties, Finney and Lane County, which also says something about the FSA crew we have there in those two counties. But we expect that to be coming up in May as well. That's a very popular program. Urge farmers, take a look at it. You got a playa out there that never produces because it's either got too dry or too wet, never in between. Take a look at that program. It's very popular. These programs, like the continuous CRP sign-up, usually have a longer term. General CRPs like 10 years, continuous can go up to 15 years and has a higher payment rate. I do want to say something about general CRP, the old traditional CRP program most of us are familiar with. A lot of producers are not aware that we now have more grazing flexibility on general CRP. Under non-emergency grazing, where you give up a fourth year payment, you can graze every other year up to 120 days and you pick the days. Now, if you graze during primary nesting season, you have to reduce your stocking rate. Outside of that, you pick the days and you get 120 days grazing. Because what we're finding is a lot of that dormant season grazing, say in January, February, March, is doing a lot of good for that grass to improve that grass cover and improve the species of grass that we have out there. You know, a lot of producers remember when we first started CRP, it's almost like we just had to leave it alone. We couldn't do anything with it. Then when we did start grazing, it is always late summer grazing after July 15th. Now you pick the days so you can flex your grazing to improve that grass stand and meet your herd's needs. So take a look at that general CRP program. It's got a lot more grazing flexibility than it used to have. The old saying that's just come up recently is if it's good for the herd, it's good for the birds. We're figuring out that good grazing practices actually improve wildlife habitat. So we're getting away from those old practices and improving on what we're doing.
Awesome. Well, Dennis, it sounds like there's a lot of exciting programs coming up for the CRP. What are some big changes that have happened in 2024, or what do producers need to be aware of as we go into this year?
Top priority right now is our Emergency Livestock Assistance Program. We call it ELAP. Has been extended retroactively to the last part of 2021 to help those who suffered from wildfires. The big one was a four-county fire there on December 15th, 2021, you know, back in Trigo, Ellis, Russell, Osborne counties, Rooks counties, that area there. That's the big one. There'll be a few other areas. But our program did not pay for winter forage left standing. For example, if you had sedan grass, you had just grass and a pasture of sedan grass, you left standing for winter pasture. We didn't pay on that. That's been extended. That's been changed. It's been extended retroactively. You only have a couple weeks to get signed up. You know, well, 8 weeks, actually. There's about 7 weeks left. So if you think you qualify for that, go see your county office and check on that and get signed up for it. The point here is that a good program rewards good practices. We have more producers now who will go with lighter stocking rates, and then they have feed left over for winter forage. And that way they don't have to feed as much hay. They don't feed as much protein. They believe it's lowering their costs. It's certainly having that standing out there increases water infiltration, reduces erosion, creates better wildlife habitat. So those producers with those kinds of practices should not be penalized. And that's what we finally recognized here. And we've gone back with the help of our administrator, Zach Duchesneau, who came out here to visit there personally, and Senator Marshall. We've gotten that extension made, and it's a good improvement. If you think you're affected by that, please get in as soon as you can to your office and sign up. Because we push this issue, because Kansas producers push this issue, this coverage will also be offered to those in Texas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska who recently suffered from wildfires. But it's a smart practice, and so we should reward smart practices.
Maybe go a little bit deeper into the ELAP program. What kind of producers does it impact, and how will it kind of help them?
Right. ELAP, Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, is triggered by drought or by, a wildfire, natural disasters. Most often it's triggered by drought. We can help producers with the cost of hauling water, unless it's to CRP ground. I'd like to see that change personally, but we can help producers of cost of hauling to water. We help, for example, hauling hay in and help cover some of those expenses of keeping your herd together. One reason we focus on that, look at where we're at right now. Because of drought over the last couple of years, our cow herd's way down. We have beef prices hitting levels that are actually discouraging consumer purchases at the meat counter, but it helps to stabilize the cow herd numbers across the country. That's good for consumers. It's good for producers. That's why we try to do some of these things like this. Keep that cow herd together rather than being dispersed, because this is a monumental event for these producers. And like I say, it stabilizes market supplies and helps consumers at the meat counter as well. So we tried to do that. It's triggered by drought. I might mention we had trouble getting all the right weather measurement data in certain places. For example, some places in Ottawa County, some places in Clay County, where drought didn't trigger on the drought map. So we couldn't help them. But those producers for several months had to haul water. Their ponds were all empty. We think because of the good people over at the Messinette, they've set up more weather stations. They're doing more weather data gathering now. So we hope we've helped prevent that problem going forward. So we know that if a drought triggers, or if we can for sure say, come up with data that indicates that they're in a drought, even though perhaps the drought monitor doesn't show it, maybe we can do something. Also, I mentioned emergency conservation program. If you do get in that drought situation for an extended period of time, the emergency conservation program can help cost share a new water well or pipelines to extend water supplies out into those pastures to help relieve that water. We have a number of places in Kansas where groundwater is not readily available. When the ponds go dry, they have to sell cows or move cattle out. If we can help provide those water supplies during a drought, again, keep the herds together and achieve better conservation goals, that's a win-win-win.
Absolutely. Kind of continuing that conversation on drought, there's a joint CRP and disaster assistance program that helps with hay and grazing lands. Can you tell me more about this and how it is helping our producers?
Yeah, that's the livestock forage program is a big one for Kansas. We're probably one of the biggest users of that in Kansas because we've had so much drought over the last 2 years. Again, it's triggered by the drought monitor, but it's a program that will pay to help replace lost forage, lost grass stands. Under this program, once you've been in D2 drought for 8 weeks or any time at all in D3 or D4 drought, it triggers. And that is a program that will help livestock producers replace all that lost forage that didn't grow because of the drought. Again, the goal is try to keep the cattle supplies intact, the cattle numbers intact, so we continue to have better prices to meat counter, but also so we don't have to disperse cow herds. We would have had much worse cow herd dispersal, which would have been much more fluctuation in beef prices to meat counter and a much bigger blow to food supplies in the United States. And I want to mention one thing very clearly. Part of what we do since 1934 is help producers, farmers, and ranchers across the nation mitigate risk. In agriculture, we have a huge amount of risk, both weather risk and market risk. We try to help mitigate that. We cannot and we should not try to remove all risk, because if we do that, then capitalist markets will not work like they should. There's no punishment for bad management. There's no reward for good management. So we don't want to remove all risk. Capitalist systems still need to work. But we do try to help producers manage risk, and for those causes that are not of their own causing, survive these kind of tough times and maintain a family-based system of agriculture in Kansas and across the nation.
Now, kind of switching gears into the disaster assistance programs, as we start to get closer to summertime, natural disasters become more frequent across Kansas. What kind of natural disasters do these programs cover, and how should farmers and ranchers seek help?
Most notably, drought is one we're most familiar with. The Risk Management Agency works with insurance, private insurance carriers, of course, across the state and across the nation to provide crop insurance. It's very important that you have that, and that will help with most of your crop weather risks. But we have the Livestock Forage Program, as I mentioned, the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, NAP insurance, which covers those programs that do not have crop insurance traditionally. We offer that at FSA for grass and those types of crops, specialty crops that don't have the all-risk crop insurance. Go see your FSA office, see what's involved. We have a growing number of specialty crop producers and producers in some of the urban areas who are growing specialty crops and different types of crops. Come see our office about NAP insurance, because we can help cover some of those losses. I will add here, keep good records. We have people who don't have good records and sometimes come in and want us to cover a loss. And it's very difficult to help cover that loss if you don't have good records. Please have good records on what your production has been in the past and what your production is in the year affected by the natural disaster. That can help cover those programs. NAP covers those programs that don't have traditional crop insurance. I want to mention one other thing about ELAP. ELAP will only help cover the hay you need for the cow herd of your size or the cattle herd of your size. If you have a lot of hay in the haystack, there is, in the private sector, reasonably priced hay insurance available. We still say, please take a look at that, because ELAP may not cover all the hay in your haystack. So if you want that covered, there's reasonable price insurance in the private sector. Take a look at that, because our programs may not cover it all. So keep that in mind. That's a big note we try to tell producers.
Yeah, that's very important for producers. Kind of focusing in on our livestock producers through the Livestock Assistance Program, can you just tell me more about it and how these funds are allocated to the livestock producers?
It's, of course, with the Livestock Forage Program, it's based on how much grass you have and the stocking rate in your area. So if you don't stock very heavily, your payment won't be as big as if you stock at the stocking rate for your area. Or if you have a lot of cattle, but not that much grass, the payment will be limited by how much grass you have. It's a calculation based on the amount of grass you have and the stocking rate for your area right there. So that's how that payment is calculated.
Awesome. And then for our crop farmers, what do they need to know about different farm loan programs, crop loss programs, and repairing damages?
Of course, key is to be signed up in our ARC PLC program. That deadline just occurred on March 15th, but the ARC PLC program is one of our primary programs out there, a more traditional program for helping producers in times of really bad markets or bad weather. And of course, producers, it's always hard to decide, well, should I be under ARC or should I be under PLC? It's always hard to know that, kind of a guessing game. But I would say that after our losses in 2022 due to drought, Kansas was the largest recipient of ARC PLC payments in 2023. ARC payments are a year delayed because they have to calculate what was the impact of the drought, and then the payments are made. But Kansas was the largest producer of those ARC PLC payments in 2023 based on drought losses in 2022. So that's the number one thing to be signed up for. There have been some other ad hoc programs Congress has implemented that we've made payments on, like ERP, but we can't always count on those. ARC PLC is the traditional program.
Okay, kind of shifting gears to our last main program of focus, the Emergency Relief Program. It kind
and it has an interesting history because of the dramatic differences in funding in the last few years. What does the funding look like going into 2024, and how is this funding allocated again?
We are operating under an extension, one-year extension of the 2018 Farm Bill, and Congress is discussing a new Farm Bill. Farm Bills typically last for another 5 years. And so once we get a new Farm Bill, we'll have a better view of where we are on ERP going forward. So it's hard to count on programs like ERP to know if they're funded until something's really firm in the law and we have clear direction on that. My guess is it will still be a factor. It's based on documented crop losses. I'll say the good thing about ERP, the main parts of ERP are based on your losses as submitted and calculated by your crop insurance program. So that makes it easier for us because finally we're sharing information between RMA and FSA. So the data comes over from RMA, FSA uses it to calculate your payments, and you get the letter in the mail. Our offices out in the country don't have to go through all the calculation process. If there's a difference between what you think it should be and what it actually is, you can take that to your FSA office and talk to them about it. That's not a problem, but it really is a streamlined process because it uses the crop insurance data that's already on file to come through to FSA and let us calculate payments. So that's a big plus with ERP. Hopefully in the future, we get to the software programs compatible so that once you report acres to the FSA office, it goes automatically to your crop insurance agent directly into their computer. Right now, we can send the 578 form, and I do that on my farm. They'll send the 578 form over to my crop insurance agent, and then agent, she has to sit down and manually enter all that data into their computer. Hopefully, at some point, the software becomes compatible so the software automatically transmits the data and it doesn't have to be manually entered again.
So for the ERE program, farm size is very important. And how does that kind of impact the funding the producers could receive?
Well, under the last ERP that was paid on 2022 losses, there was a progressive stacking where smaller producers got a slightly larger percentage of their losses covered than a very large producer. The large producer's reduction of payments was pretty small. The net impact was that 80% of the producers in Kansas got a larger payment than they would have otherwise. The theory is the small producer has less economies of scale and it's harder to recover from a natural disaster than for a very large producer. The net impact on large producers was small. We had large producers still got very large payments in Kansas. The smaller producers got a slightly larger payment. Again, if you're smaller and you have less economies of scale, it's harder to recover from those kinds of natural disasters, which is why that was done that way. There was also a little higher payment made to veterans who are getting started in farming in their first 10 years, trying to help veterans who get into farming make the transition to beginning farmers. You know, all the demographic data tells us we need more young people getting started in farming. And there were some payments made to producers who historically been underserved. And that was a little bit controversy, but I'll say this. You know, I've talked to Dan Glickman, and he will tell you that when he started with FSA, when he started as the Secretary of Agriculture in the 1990s, he was surprised at some of the discrimination that he found that had occurred within the agency. Some of the lawsuits we've had have been significant. We don't see that by and large very much in Kansas, I don't think, but we have seen it in other parts of the nation. It has been significant. It has been egregious. And that's part of what we're trying to address here, to avoid lawsuits in the future and help people who are in groups that were historically underserved and suffered some very significant discrimination get back online here and make sure we don't do that in the future. It's occurred. I don't think it's occurred much in Kansas, if at all, but it has occurred, and it has occurred in some very egregious ways in the nation, and that's why we're addressing it.
That's awesome that you're taking initiative there. All right, Dennis, is there anything else agriculture producers need to be aware of this year, or are there any programs that we haven't really covered?
Well, we start reminding people now. The acreage reporting deadline will be July 15th. We wish it's a little bit later than that, but to get the data gathered and get it over to crop insurance program, we'd have to have it on July 15th. So keep those records. Everybody's planning now, planting their corn now, planting beans now. We'll be planting, of course, through June on Milo and our other crops. Keep those records. Be sure to get them in by July 15th. I say that as much for myself as for anybody, because sometimes about July the 9th or 10th, I'm calling saying, hey, yeah, I better get an appointment. So please accommodate those. Our folks, mostly the ladies at the counter there at the FSA offices, they really go out of their way. We have a strong culture of public service in the Farm Service Agency. I'm so proud of them. I just ask farmers, try to accommodate them too and give them plenty of time to get all the data entered and get an appointment, get your information in. As I said, I'm very proud of the culture of public service we have in the Farm Service Agency. We have 96 offices across the state of Kansas. And just by and large, every one of those offices, when I visit them, when I talk to our employees, they tell me how much they love the producers. I had one of our employees out in Morton County, there in Elkhart, say that the office she worked in closed. She got a job with FSA. She planned to work for us for 5 years and retire. She loves the producers so much, she can't retire. And she's been with us, close to 10 years now. When the doors opened after COVID, I had many of our program technicians tell me, I'm so glad to get the doors open because I miss the producers. That's the culture of public service we have in the Farm Service Agency. I'm very proud of it. We strive to keep that going. Our programs really started with the Agricultural Adjustment Act in 1934. My parents came through the Dust Bowl and the Depression. They talked about how it felt when they finally thought somebody was on their side and wanted to help them survive all those tough times. We learned a lot about how not to do programs, better ways to do programs, and it's evolved through there. So we have programs now that are based more on markets, less on market-based subsidies. You know, we let the market do its work to allocate planning decisions, so we're not doing it. So we've made a lot of improvements, a lot of that with the guidance of groups like Farm Bureau. I can remember debates over the 1985 Farm Bill and 1990 Farm Bill, and groups like Farm Bureau have helped guide that debate. And we have subsidies now that are external to the market, so the market still help determine our planning decisions. At the Farm Service Agency, what I tell people is, what are the most critical elements of national security, of economic security, of foreign policy? You look at those elements, and in every category, a safe and abundant food supply is the number one priority to be nationally secure, to have economic security, to have a strong foreign policy. And what do we do at the Farm Service Agency? We have the privilege of partnering with the world's best farmers and ranchers to help improve the environment, to reduce erosion, improve wildlife habitat, and help our country maintain the safest, most abundant food supply in the world. So we think what we do is mission critical for the country and for our producers, and it's our privilege to get to do this job.
Absolutely. All right, Dennis, for our listeners that want to find more information about these FSA programs that we discussed today, where can they go about finding them?
Online, we're at farmers.gov. And I just recommend, particularly for the older guys like me that aren't as good online as some people, just go to your local county service center. They'll do their best to help you find out what you need to know and get the right forms or the right information. We have 96 of those service centers around Kansas. We'd like to serve you.
Dennis, thank you for sharing with us your wealth of knowledge around different FSA programs and their impact they can have on the state. It sounds like the FSA program has a tremendous impact on farm communities across Kansas. Listeners, be sure to tune in next week as we learn more about farm loans with Zach Ducheneau. Again, I'm your host, Savannah Peterson, here on Inside Ag. If you like this episode, be sure to share it with your friends.